Hey there, I'm Sandy Scarlatta, and welcome to the Happiness Solve podcast. Twice a week, we explore the journey to finding true happiness by sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and insightful conversations with some of today's leading experts. But we don't just scratch the surface. We dive deep into the real grit of what it takes to live a genuinely happy life. Whether you're looking to improve your well-being, enhance your relationships, or simply add more joy to your life, you're in the right place. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's episode. Because happiness is a choice, and the choice is yours. Hey, John, how's it going today? I'm so happy to have you on my show. How's everything going?
Sandy, it's going really great, and I want to thank you for having me, and I want to just say what a great privilege it is to be on a podcast with somebody who takes so much time to work with people and to teach people new things that they don't learn in school. And I want all your fans to give you 5-star ratings and, you know, post you and share you with other people, because that's a service that you're doing really from your heart. And I appreciate that. So that's where we're going to start. Yeah.
Bringing tears to my eyes. You know, it's so great that you said that, and I'll just get on my soapbox for a minute, but yeah, I do have some sponsors, which are newer mm-hmm. sponsors. So this has been a totally self-funded podcast I've been doing for almost 5 years.
Wow. Yeah.
And it costs roughly $1,000 a month to produce.
I can believe it. Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to go off camera for just a minute. You are going to be You're going to be episode 350. Aren't you the lucky man?
Oh my God. Woo-hoo! That's amazing.
Episode 350. This
That's wonderful.
And so, yeah, it really is a labor of love. And I started this show because, number one, as humans, we learn from stories.
Yes.
And what better way to learn than from somebody else's experiences? Because when we recognize that somebody else went through something that was much more challenging than we'd ever gone through, right? Mm-hmm. Then you're like, wow, you know, I got this. I can choose a different way, a different perspective, a different way to think about the world and how I show up in it, more importantly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? You know, because happiness is a choice. And the choice is yours, folks. I say it every episode. The choice is yours. And, you know, I have it on my board, my whiteboard. It says, you're not getting this day back. Right. Ponder that for a minute, right?
That's right.
Some of us, God willing, we will have tomorrow, but we don't know, right? There's no guarantees.
And very true.
So we only have today. That's it. So, okay, enough about me. Because this episode is about you, John.
Okay.
So for the audience, John Labman, don't forget your last name, John Labman is a spiritual awakening professional with over 24 years of experience. Thousands of people break free from abuse, anxiety, and stress with John's help to achieve spiritual liberation. I love that. I was looking at your website this morning and I'm like, liberation? Because mm-hmm. that's really what it's about, right?
Right.
When you choose a different way of being, you're liberating yourself from your old ways that doesn't serve you, right?
That's right.
I know you have a lot of experience about that. So we're going to talk about everything with you. I know you have a background in psychology, energy healing, and yoga. Love it. And your mission is to help people master the basics of being human and achieve true liberation. So, John, please share with the audience your story, because it's pretty interesting.
Okay.
And that's how you got where you are today, right?
That's right. So I work now as a liberation therapist, and that means a combination of psychology and spirituality. And how I got there was I grew up with sexual abuse in the home and with bullying at school and with traditional middle-class family, and went to Jewish Reformed synagogue and got bar mitzvahed and didn't have any belief in God, even got confirmed and still didn't have a belief in God. And I was suffering so much that I was really looking for answers. So the very first transformation was my twin sister comes home and says, hey, there's a guy who's teaching biology, he's going to teach the New Testament at our friend's meeting house in town. I'm going to go. I'm like, sign me up.
But that's the opposite of, well, not the opposite, but it's a stark contrast.
Stark contrast to Judaism.
To Judaism, yeah.
Right. So I went, and at the same time, almost at the same time, somebody came to our 10th grade class, 750 kids, and showed a film about a school in Wales, the UK, international high school, kids from 50 countries in a Hearst castle. And I was like, oh my gosh, I could get away from all this horrible stuff that I've been living with at home and at school and be with kids in another country. And I was like, I'm in, I'm going to try it. You know, I don't know why I had the courage at that moment, and your audience may have those moments where suddenly they feel like, oh, I'm going to try something absolutely crazy. Let's see if it works. And I got an acceptance letter April 1st, but then they said, we don't know about the scholarships and your family doesn't really qualify and we don't think you're going to get a scholarship. My parents said, you're not going unless you get a scholarship. We can't afford this. So they had a postal strike, and I waited a whole month and I prayed every day, God, if you exist, prove it to me. I was so full of hubris and arrogance in those days. Prove it to me that you exist and get me into the school. And sure enough, I did get in. And so I converted to evangelical Protestantism at that point and became a very avid Christian fundamentalist evangelical for a number of years. And because of more family problems, I ended up, and internal problems, I ended up going to, first starting at Haverford College after my experience in Wales, and then kind of having a nervous breakdown there and going to a Christian college that was a denominational member of the Reformed Presbyterian Church. And that was the closest in alignment to my own belief at the time. So I went to that school, and there I met people who had a Christian cooperative community in here in Eastern Pennsylvania. And they were like, you ought to come and spend a summer with us. And I said, sure, why not? My mom's just divorcing her second husband. I don't have anywhere else to live. I lived at college last year. What do I have to lose? So I go up there, and the woman who's the head of the church pays more attention to me in 2 hours than anybody's ever paid in my entire life. And I don't know if anybody else in your audience has been love bombed, but I was pulled right in. And I spent the summer there, and I joined the church. And right after I joined, there was a schism in the church. The elder that I actually lived with that summer was excommunicated with his whole family. And I ended up graduating college, coming back to live in the church community as it devolved into a brainwashing cult.
Oh my gosh.
And from the brainwashing cult, you know, 7 years of terror and fear, it was just like my whole childhood and time in school all over again. Wales was a brief escape. And then suddenly I'm back in the thick of lots of trauma and lots of fright and terror, and you couldn't do anything right. Even though we were all dedicated to Christ, we were living celibate lives in our early 20s. There came a point at which somebody tried to burn the church down, and then the woman who really ran the church, even though it was supposed to be run by the elders who were her husband and son, she said, somebody here is hiding sin. That's why the church was burned down. You're all suspended from communion, and if you don't confess your secret sins to us before we rebuild the church with your help — we were all laboring to rebuild and working full-time jobs and paying 10% of our pre-tax income to the church, right? — if you don't do all of this that we say and you enter this church again without confessing your sin, you're twice doubly damned to hell. That was the language that was used at the time, right? You know, the Calvinists, they believe in total depravity. That's their first dogma. So, you know, I'm dedicating my life to Christ, but now I'm being told I'm a wicked, sinful person. So I try to confess that I think that I'm gay to them. In fact, I was. But they didn't believe me because I had no experience. I was a celibate. I'd never had a sexual experience at all. So, you know, the last 6 months there, I'm like, what do? I'm in a double bind. And your audience may be familiar with that. It looks like there are two choices only. And either one of them, if I stay and go back into the church and they don't think I've confessed my secret sin, I'm doubly damned to hell. If I leave, I'm going to hell and I'm going to die of AIDS. And that's what they told me. This is how scary it was.
Was this in the 80s?
This was in 1984. That last year was when I was pacing the floors, you know, till 3 o'clock in the morning in a house that I shared with four or five other guys, trying to figure out what in the world I was going to do, because I had taken lifetime vows and I was serious. I was going to stay. Yeah. And then suddenly one day I thought, I've got to get out of here. They're not going to let me go back into the church. I'm worse off if I go back, according to them, it seems like, than if I leave. So I paced the floors for those months. And finally, one Saturday morning, I just decided I've got to get out of here. And I was terrified because they were all gone from the house for some reason. But I packed up my stuff as quick as I could go, got in my car and just fled out of there. Unfortunately, I didn't see anybody. My heart was pounding through my chest. Within a day, I was in a therapist's office. And that was the second big turnaround in my life. This therapist said, look, I can't help you with your religious issues. I don't know anything about heaven or hell, but you're going through a divorce. And then she said one thing to me that I'll never forget. Because I was feeling hopeless. I felt like I'm going to die. I'm going to end my own life because I'm going to go to hell any way you imagine it, according to what I was taught and brainwashed into thinking. But there's something in me that was like, maybe that's not true. But that wasn't even conscious. And she said, hey, do you realize you wouldn't be coming to see me if you didn't have any hope to have a better life? Absolutely changed my world. And she also started to ask, what did I think and what did I feel? I don't know if your audience has suffered the same emotional neglect that most of us have growing up. Nobody asks us how we feel, what we think, what we want to do. Yeah. They tell us what to think and feel. They tell us to conform to what they're doing, or we rebel, and that's not truthful either. And so in that brief session, 1 year session of therapy, I got the idea that there was actually a person in here who could choose to accept being gay in 1984, even in the midst of the AIDS crisis. I could be a person who could accept, I could either reject the way I was made by God, or I could accept it. And if I rejected it, I would be miserable for the rest of my life. I knew that. If I accepted it, there was a chance.
Hey, everyone. Today, I'm thrilled to share something truly special with you. Have you ever felt like you're just scratching the surface of your potential? Or maybe you're looking for ways to bring more balance and fulfillment into your life. If that resonates with you, then I have an event you won't want to miss. Introducing the Holistic Life Mastery event live and in person November 7th through 9th at the beautiful La Quinta Hotel outside of Palm Springs, California. This isn't just another seminar. It's a transformative experience designed to help you unlock your full potential, cultivate a holistic approach to life, and achieve mastery in every area that matters to you. Imagine spending 2.5 days surrounded by like-minded individuals, all committed to personal growth and conscious living. You'll have the opportunity to learn from world-renowned speakers, engage in powerful workshops, and gain practical tools that you can apply immediately to your life. Plus, our keynote speaker is Emmy Award-winning producer, actor, and author of The Way of the Cobra, Sean Kanan. You may have seen him in the number one Netflix series, Cobra Kai. Whether you're looking to enhance your personal well-being, improve your professional skills, or find more joy and purpose, the Holistic Life Mastery event has something for everyone. Our speakers are leaders in their fields, covering topics from peak performance and mindfulness to business psychology to relationships. And the best part, this event is designed to cater to all aspects of your life. It's about creating holistic balance, mind, body, and spirit. You'll leave feeling inspired, empowered, and ready to take on the world with a renewed sense of purpose with a plan of action. So mark your calendars and join us for an unforgettable experience. You'll find the registration link in the show notes. Don't wait. Spaces are limited and filling up fast. Remember, this is your chance to invest in yourself and your future. The Holistic Life Mastery event is more than just a workshop. It's a stepping stone to the life you've always dreamed of.
Not a guarantee, but a chance that I could be happy. Happiness solved, right? It's a wonderful, wonderful title, Sandy. I love it, right? So you choose in that moment, you have to make an internal choice. Am I going to investigate myself? Am I going to find out who I am? Or am I going to believe what everybody's been telling me, or they really, or the fact that they've been ignoring me and I feel like a kind of empty shell? Am I going to believe that, what they've told me, or am I going to believe what I find out for myself? And that also, working with that wonderful woman, I don't think she's alive anymore. Her name is Pat McGrath, in Princeton, New Jersey. She was so great in what she did with me that I really wanted to do that once I met her. And I wasn't able to do that for a long time because I had other goals. I wanted to go sing on Broadway, and I had a very well-trained voice. I'd been trained for many years. And my voice coach, who had Buddy Buckley as a client, said, yeah, you can sing, but you got to come and study the method acting, and you've got to learn to dance. So I went to New York, and I learned about living in the present moment, which we hear a lot about in current psychology and holistic thinking. But in 1985, you only heard about it in method acting. You know, really, the Eastern traditions weren't here in a big way yet. And I didn't go through with my acting career. I discovered that I hated performing. I really loved the self-discovery process of acting, because for your listeners, too, discovering that you have feelings about everything, you have opinions about everything, that's the beginning of freedom and happiness, because I've got to know myself before I can be happy. I mean, if
it's a self-awareness,
right? If I don't have self-awareness, how can I be happy? Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's right. So
eventually I left acting and I was looking around for things to do and just was doing administrative work, which is what I did out of college, because I took an English major instead of pre-seminary. And I learned to type. I was listening to your last podcast, the guy that learned to type, who was a CEO, right? I learned to type, and so I had a job, right? And I ran one of the first word processing centers in an engineering company in 1981. And so I had work, but it wasn't work that I loved. It was just work to pay the bills. Right. And sometime in 1988, I was living in Philadelphia for a little while, and my second voice teacher, who, truth be told, was also my boyfriend for a while, said, you've got to come back to New York and meet people who are teaching us how to live in the present moment, not on the stage, but in real life.
Right.
How do you feel present? How do you stay out of your head, right? How do you enjoy the excitement that I enjoyed in those scene studies in acting school? It was the most exciting moment of my life to be on the stage, just feeling what I was feeling and living like clearly full on in that moment. That was so happy for me. And so when he said that, I came back to New York. I used to commute back and forth from Philly to New York Wednesday after work. I would go up, do a sitting, come back, go to bed at midnight, go to work the next day. I was so enthralled with the fact that they were teaching me that I could escape all the chatter in my mind, all the negative chatter in my case. And your listeners probably live with a lot of negative chatter.
Everyone does. If you're human, you know, if you're human, you've got the negative chatter up there. It's in our DNA.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's really dreadful. And until I learned to meditate, I went to a one-month retreat, another turning point. Went to a one-month retreat. I took a $4,000 unsecured loan in 1988.
Oh, wow.
2 weeks paid vacation, 2 weeks unpaid. and went to Hawaii to learn to be present and to meditate. And that was another one of those big turning points. It was like,
do you remember who your instructor was?
Oh, sure. The names of the people were Shia and Ariel Kane.
Okay.
And they were students of Paul Lowe. And Paul Lowe was one of the lieutenants of Sri Bhagavan Rajneesh, who's known as Osho. So there was a whole tantric thing going on. And they taught me to meditate. It was the first time in my life that I ever felt peaceful and quiet and content. The natural happiness that we all have in us as our basic human nature. Satchitananda in Sanskrit means truth, consciousness, love, bliss, freedom, peace. And that term is how the Hindu faith, how the yogis describe what our basic nature is, that we already inside of us have happiness, contentment. It's already there, and peace is already there. And I didn't know any of that until I went to Hawaii and had that turning point moment. And then I was like, okay, I've got to have more of this. And so eventually, you know, I became a licensed massage therapist. Why? Because those teachers, the Canes, did a combination of body work, breath work, counseling, and meditation. And that became the new template for how I wanted to work holistically. And the fastest, quickest way to work with people was work with their bodies as a massage therapist. It took a year of training. And you got a license, and I actually worked with an insurance company. They paid me as well. And eventually I went to some graduate courses at NYU in psychology and counseling. But it wasn't the right course for me. It was rehabilitation counseling. So at that point, I met my partner of 29 years now, and he moved to New York. Thank you. And he
went time.
Long time. He wanted to be a massage therapist, so he went to massage school as well. And then together we studied energy healing because I was putting my hands on people and getting pains in my body. It wasn't Reiki. I was just doing basic massage. But I was like, why am I feeling their pain in my body? So we went and studied energy healing for 3 years, Barbara Brennan's Hands of Light, taught by one of her teachers, not by her. But I felt it was disempowering to people. It was still, you're going to heal, your healer's telling you what's wrong with you. And I wanted my clients and your audience, you folks, you want to be self-empowered. You don't want to be giving the power away to someone else like I did in the cult. You want to be self-empowered. So I finished that course in 98, and I went right to graduate school and got a degree in counseling psychology. And right away after that, I got a 500-hour certification in yoga.
Wow.
And I taught meditation because I herniated a disc during teacher training in yoga. And so I started to combine all those things way back in 2000. And then in 2001, I had my initial spiritual awakening, what's called Kensho in some places, where I understood this individual consciousness is God itself. It's again the yogi tradition that says in Sanskrit, I am Atman Brahman. This individual consciousness is the divine consciousness. There's no difference. And your nature is love, contentment, freedom, and peace. Not unhappiness, anxiety, frustration, overwhelm, burnout, and every other thing that we deal with nowadays as people on the planet. And so what I've been doing since then is developing the integration. And at some point, I didn't know that I'd been sexually assaulted as a child in my own home. At some point, that all surfaced after I was a therapist. And so I started training in trauma treatment. And I worked with Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, and I worked with Dr. Bruce Perry, you know, in live classes with them and with their associates, and got trauma training. I incorporated that for my own sake because I was a wreck for about a year and a half. I don't know if any of your audience has gone through that. Like, you totally get unglued. All I knew, and my whole world turned upside down. Oh, you've been abused in your own home. You didn't even remember it.
Right.
Right. So I've really incorporated all of this learning into what I do with people now. And I've recently written a book called Being Human and Waking Up. And I offer a course called Being Human and Waking Up, Experiments In. And I really work with people holistically. So I use all the background that I have. I don't read people intuitively in the sense that I don't do energy healing like I used to, but I use all those skills and bring all that knowledge and experience to clients to teach them just basically how to be a human being. Because nobody teaches us that most of our thoughts are false, and false thoughts always generate negative emotion. It's your false thoughts that make you feel like you're crazy or nuts or overwhelmed. Nobody teaches us anything about how to check our thoughts. Nobody teaches us what our feelings even are, let alone how to discern where they come from. Is the feeling from something that really happened, like, yeah, my grandma died and I'm sad? Or have I made up a story in my head about grandma dying and being sad like I did when I was acting? The emotion feels the same, but if we act on an emotion from a false source that's just made up in our heads, we create all kinds of suffering for ourselves and for others.
That's right.
And our happiness is totally eclipsed by that.
Yeah.
Right. So what I try to do first is teach people, hey, start to question your thoughts and then start to track your emotions. And part of the thought identification process is, if you teach people to meditate, paradoxically, they become more aware of thoughts during their regular waking life than they are otherwise. Yeah. It's not what meditation is supposed to do, but it's a side benefit. And then if you're in a good mood and you have your lunch and nothing's changed externally, and you know, again, your audience may have, and you may have felt this, suddenly I've had lunch, and after lunch, I'm in a really funky mood. I'm really depressed. I'm blue. I'm anxious. And I say to people, oh, well, what were you thinking about during lunch? As if nothing's changing in your environment, something up here has triggered you into some kind of a bad mood. If you can figure out what it is and check and see if there's any truth to the origins of it, you can go back to being happy and calm and engaged in your day.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to ask that simple question, is it true?
That's right. And I learned that from Byron Katie. Long after spiritual awakening, all this anxiety is still going on. How come I'm still anxious? All of these thoughts are making me anxious.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and they're not true, and I'm suffering from something that's not true? What a waste of life.
Right, exactly.
Right.
That's exactly right.
So as you work with that, it's very, very simple, right? I only teach basically four things: how to deal with your thoughts, your feelings, how to meditate, how to be mindful. Those four basic things can take anybody as far as they want to go psychologically, or all the way to spiritual liberation, even into the condition called no self.
Mm. Yeah, meditation is powerful. I had my first experience with it in 2007.
Wonderful.
And I trained under Stephen Sadlier.
Mm-hmm.
He's located in Laguna Beach. He has a self-awareness institute. Wow. I think he's mostly retired now, but he still does trainings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but this was back in 2007 where I was on a conference call, you know, and I got a headset and I plugged it into my phone and, you know, it was on the phone, you know. And it was so life-changing. And the following year, I attended a meditation retreat out in Palm Desert. It wasn't Joshua Tree, but it was around there. So it was a similar yoga meditation facility, you know, the whole thing. Beautiful, you know, incredible. We had a day of silence. We sat in meditation for close to 5 hours, I believe it was. And that day I will never forget, because I was in the middle of writing my novel that I won 2 book awards for.
Oh, wonderful.
And I literally sat for hours. Just my fingers were just moving. And I don't even, my roommate, who's, we're still best friends. We coached skating together. We coached figure skating together, and we're sisters to this day. But she was my roommate. She was the one who introduced me to meditation, and I had been in some of her little meditation classes 10 years prior to that. And I'm like, I can't meditate. I'm like, this is my mind, you know, because I'm just such a, I'm like, my friends call me a thoroughbred because I'm just like on, like nonstop. Mm-hmm. But I still meditate to this day. Mm. And anytime during the day when I'm struggling with anything, I will stop and just close my eyes. And once you learn how to meditate, just for the audience, you were able to tap into that energy very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I've only done that form of meditation.
Right.
They're all good. Like, just pick one that works for you, right? I mean, there's a lot of different methods. But for me, what I tell people that ask about it, I'm like, you get into a state of being where your mind, because you're focusing on the thalamus part of your brain. Mm-hmm. And when you're drawing in that source, universe, God, energy, whatever you want to call it, it starts to numb. And you get this high that is better than any substance you could take externally, right? It is a high like you will never experience. It is incredible.
And that,
how peaceful.
Yeah. That is your birthright. That's how we were meant to live. Like the deer that come walking through my yard, they're not always in a hyper alert, got to do it mode. They're only in that mode when there's actual danger in the environment.
Right.
Right. Right. So it's a wonderful practice, and you become aware that your life really takes place in your senses. Your contact with reality is in the sensory fields.
Yes.
This is always secondary to the senses. This is always reporting on the senses or reporting on other thoughts. It is removed from the reality that stabilizes us. So the more we return to present moment, you know, holding my cup with cold water in it, feeling the metal, feeling the desk, feeling my weight on the chair, automatically when you just do that for a few seconds, you're already relaxed at least 1 or 2%. And if you sit and meditate then and get to close your eyes, you could be relaxed by 50 to 90% within about 10 or 20 minutes. And, you know, when you do a whole, I've done, I don't know if you know Adyashanti, if you've been in his retreats. It's a teacher up in Northern California who just retired. He retired, by the way, because of trauma. He admitted that he'd been through some physical trauma with a medical condition for 20 years. He'd never revealed to anyone.
Oh,
I thought it was incredibly brave of him. But he would take you into a retreat. You would be silent for 6 days, no talking to anyone, no writing.
Right.
Well, no, you could write, but no phone calls, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And you would meditate 40-minute periods, 6 of them a day. And by the end of that, you're like, oh, this is what it feels like to be a human being. I want this. This is happiness. This is contentment. This is happiness solved, right? And so, you know, that's really what I do now, is teach people how to get there. And it's not complicated, and you don't need 20,000 self-help books. The basic skills can be taught in a single book. And the basics of spiritual awakening are all available to anybody who's interested. It's not rocket science. It's what you already are.
Right. But here's the thing that people don't recognize, because so often I hear people say, no, this is just how I am. It's never going to change. And it's such a limiting belief, right?
Yeah.
But what is liberation? It's freedom. It's potential. Mm-hmm. It's finding your purpose. It's jumping out of bed in the morning and being excited to create impact.
Right.
You know, because when you step away from, you become self-aware, you learn how to love yourself, and suddenly you want to serve other people.
That's right.
And that's what this is about, right?
That's right.
We're, yeah. As humans, we're supposed to be in communities.
Yes.
We need that connection with another human being.
Always.
You know, and I'm just saying, you know, whether it's your girlfriends, your partners, your, you know, any part of your life. It doesn't matter. We need that human connection, and we're here to serve other people.
That's right. And you see how hungry people are for that connection if you do the kind of work that we do. And if I take my eyes off of anybody for any reason during a session with them, they're like looking for my eyes. They are so starved for somebody to help them see who they are.
Right.
It's possible, right? You don't have to live an automatic life based on what you were taught. The culture is full of toxicity, but you can break out of that and become free from that. And it takes effort, but it's not complicated effort. It's simple effort. It's just, okay, I have to learn these skills and then I have to use them, period. Simple skills, dealing with my thoughts, dealing with my feelings, meditating, being present, noticing when I'm resisting what's going on in the present moment. Can I relax? And all of that, just, we have the capacity in our bodies for an experience of infinity and of eternity. There is no actual sense of felt time. There's no time sense in our experience. It's only in our minds.
That's right.
There's no sense of boundary between me and everything that is. I can walk out of the office and disappear into the sky, so to speak. Because that's all just mental boundary that's set. So we have the capacity to feel infinity and eternity on a regular basis, and our own nature as love, bliss, freedom, peace, and truthfulness, by the way, too. Truthfulness is a very important part of what we are. Our bodies do not respond well to lies, not told to us, right?
And they also say now that authenticity is now the highest frequency.
Right.
It's always been said that love is the highest frequency of 528 hertz, but now they're saying that authenticity is even a higher frequency. And we can tell, that's how you can tell when somebody's bullshitting us, right?
Right.
You're spidey and you're like, no, I don't think so.
Right. You've got that little voice in your head that says, yeah, no, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Right. Well, you know, John, I call myself a recovering Catholic. And I made the decision years ago that I'm spiritual, not religious. Mm-hmm. And however, there's a place for it. And let me just say to the audience, whatever you believe, that's all that matters to you, right? Like you need to have something you believe in. And if you believe and you practice religion, that's perfect. It just, as long as it makes sense for you. Mm-hmm. For me, it just never made sense. However, I do believe that Buddha and Jesus were incredible humans that walked this earth. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, you know, you can obtain heaven on earth.
That's right. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Yeah.
I don't know the exact phrase, but it's, you know, it's probably been twisted around many, many times over the past 2,000 years.
Yeah.
But the point is that through meditation and mindfulness and self-awareness and self-love and spirituality, that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. Because we can learn to feel like this is heaven.
That's right.
Right? My favorite quote is peace. It's not about being in the midst of noise, trouble, or hard work. It's being in the midst of those things and still being calm in your heart.
Right.
And it's such a challenge some days when there's so much external things going on to just stay centered and in peace.
And you know, for you and for your audience, that's the practice of happiness, though, right? How do you get back in touch with your basic contentment, your basic nature, love, bliss, freedom, peace, and truthfulness? By just getting back to center and getting out of thoughts and realizing, oh, wait, here, right here, is all the peace and all the happiness I need. I don't need anything out here. I don't need to be rich. I don't need to be famous. I don't need to be singing on Broadway. Right? I can be very, very happy. And being of service, the thing about being of service is that love is pouring out of us all the time when we're of service. Right? Whether we feel it very strongly or not, that's the energy for service, is love. And the more love we feel, the more obvious it is that we aren't wicked and born in sin and unworthy and separated from God. But in fact, we are already one with the divine. And that love is the evidence of that. And the service is challenging, yes. It's not like we float through life with no challenges. There are challenges every day, all the time, just like everybody else has. But when
all the time, every day, twice on Sundays, sometimes five times on Sundays, actually, especially when there's football on, right?
Can I stand this again? Right, yeah. Right, but you see, the practice is the same things always bring us back to who we are, to what we actually really are. And it's all, it's actually quite simple.
It's not easy.
Not easy, no. It takes a kind of repetition.
Practice.
Yeah.
It's just a practice.
Yeah, the old joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice.
Right. Yeah. It's like anything where there, you know, for me, I play tennis. I've got two matches this weekend, official, you know, USTA matches. And I got to practice, right? If I want to have a smithering chance of even coming close to winning, I have to practice.
Yeah.
And so it's no different. And, you know, happiness is a practice. Spirituality is a practice. Mm-hmm. Being a doctor is a practice. Being a lawyer is a practice. Being a therapist, we're all practicing. It doesn't matter what it is we're doing. We're all practicing. And I question all of my audience, when are you going to start practicing your mindfulness, right? Because it's all it is.
Right.
It's just a practice. It's not complicated at all.
No, I mean, the guys who go fishing and hunting and golfing, they're doing mindfulness all the time if they're in silence, right?
That's right.
It's natural. It's already there. Women, the traditional women's activities, for instance, that we would have thought of in 1900, like sewing and knitting, and that's all mindfulness too. Right?
I love doing laundry and I love organizing a closet, like, because those things, like here's just a golden nugget for the audience. Like, if you're feeling like your life is out of control and you've got so many things out of control, stop and go organize your pantry or organize your closet and start decluttering. Because I'm telling you, that simple exercise we'll put everything in perspective, because you're controlling. It's something you have control over. And by doing something you have control over, you're able to work through everything else. And you just feel better at the end of the day. And then you've accomplished something. And you're not, like, it's just all positive. And you feel good. And you're donating your old clothes to somebody who really needs them. And, you know, like there's so many great things out of that.
It's true. I do a periodic purge in my home every 6 months, more or less. And we get rid of all the stuff that we haven't used in a couple of years. And it's really, it's also a relief. The Tibetan Buddhists say that everything that you own has to have a place in your mind. You have to know how to lay your hands on it, right? So imagine all the burden of all that, right? So it's another way to get happier is, all right, I don't have to worry about all this stuff. Let me get rid of it. Okay.
It's really fun. I actually have a bag in my closet, like a shopping bag, that just sits there. And, but, you know, because I've, you know, I'm pushing 60. I've got clothes in there that I had 20 years ago that I still wear occasionally, and that's okay. Right. But then there's some you're like, nope. Like you said, if you haven't worn it in a year or two, ditch it.
Right.
All right. We're really digressing now, John.
But it's still happiness. It's still the theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's about being present when you're organizing the closet and you're feeling the clothes and you're making that choice. I see it. I feel it. I touch it. I don't get any pleasure out of it. I haven't worn it in 5 years or 10. That's present moment activity. That's still okay.
Right? Yeah.
So the whole life is spiritual. The word is even unnecessary at a point.
Yeah.
You know, God is this, right? You, me, and everything else. So the whole of our life is already spiritual.
1,000%. So I love your book, Simply Awake. Or no, your column is Simply Awake. Your book is Being Human and Waking Up.
Yes. And I
love that, because that's what we're doing, right? We are human doers. And we have to get back to human beings.
Yeah. Can I be a human? And then the doing follows naturally, right?
Right.
If I don't know how to love myself, I can't love my neighbor. And so I have to learn how to be a human. I have to learn the basic skills of being human. That's actually what people want in both psychology and in spirituality. I want to be able to live a happy life.
Yeah.
And so being human and waking up is about living a happy life. And because of your generosity and doing all these podcasts, all these years without sponsorship, I knew about that generosity of heart, even though I didn't know the formalities. I want to give your listeners a copy of my book, a PDF of my book. They'd have to buy it on Amazon for $29 workbook form or $10 in Kindle form. And they can find that copy by just DMing me on Instagram at John Labman. That's at sign JONLABMAN with the word human being. And I will send them a copy of my book for free as a way of giving forward everything that's been given to me and you.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, so folks, definitely go on Instagram. John Labman is his handle on Instagram. Send him a direct message and he will email you a PDF version of his book. I think that's so generous. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
This has been an amazing conversation. I could talk to you all day.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it too. I can't believe it goes so fast.
It does. It goes so, so fast. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience that you hadn't talked about?
I think that people who've been traumatized, seriously traumatized, and a lot of adverse childhood experiences, they have to work, unfortunately, harder at this than others do. But I want to represent that group of people and say, we too can live happiness solved. We too can be happy people and live ordinary, happy lives. And for a trauma survivor, an ordinary, happy life is extraordinary because we never expect that we'll have it. So I would say that too. And also just to thank you once again for your generosity in doing podcasts all this time among the many things you do, and to say to your audience again, support this wonderful woman and her work, like her, you know, give her the 5-star ratings, you know, and refer friends to her. And I will do the same when the podcast is released and send it to my small list.
Awesome. No, I totally appreciate it. Thank you so much, John, for coming on. I love sharing stories like yours because we all, you know, there's always somebody that's been through something worse than we have. Mm-hmm. Not to take away from anybody's pain, because if it's the first time you've experienced pain, it's pain.
That's
pain,
right.
Is pain. It comes in all shapes and sizes. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I always mention that, John, because I was one of those who, well, I have a little bit of PTSD. Like, I just totally minimized it because I didn't feel worthy enough to acknowledge that my trauma was just as bad as other people's trauma. So I was like, you know, I just minimized it, you know?
Right.
Don't minimize your trauma. It's real. It's real.
Right. Everybody's pain is their pain. Even if it's first world pain or it's third world pain, it's still pain.
Doesn't matter.
That's right.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. First world, third world, second world, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's all pain. All right. So reach out to John. And if you do have any trauma, he would certainly be, I can't think of anybody more qualified to work with. So that's folks, powerful. If you're, you know, reach out to John. He's the real deal. And he can definitely help you break through some of this and learn happiness solved. All right, John, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening today. And take care, everyone.